Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 40 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And the title for today's podcast is The Ashwins. And that is because Ravichandran Ashwin is now one of nine cricketers in the history of our sport who has breached the 500 test wicket mark. And
no, he isn't, because we are recording this before he's taken
the
500 wickets.
That's why I was keeping it generic, because I thought that we could fool the audience. Of course, it would be hysterical if Ashwin actually does not go on to take a wicket.
He never passes it.
Yeah. Then we'll have to delay this episode, but hopefully this will go out as soon as he does. And arguably one of the greatest minds to have ever graced the sport. Let's talk about like his cricket, of course, and throughout the course of this podcast. But out of that entire list, you know, nine bowlers who have crossed 500 test wickets, he has the third best average, and that is one hell of an achievement, Jared.
Yeah, there are obviously reasons why his average is slightly lower than other players. Mm-hmm. He's not an automatic selection home and away, which is part of it, where most of those other guys are. But most players aren't as destructive as him at home as well, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, that swings both ways, I think, that particular metric. But to have a finger spinner, and maybe this is slightly in a part of DRS as well, but to have a finger spinner, and I mean a traditional finger spinner, not like merely be this good with a bowling average, is kind of weird. I spent a lot of my time looking at, you know, the best and worst bowling averages in different eras or whatever. I can tell you who's always at one end. And it's always the finger spinners, and they're not at the pretty end. Always got terrible averages. So to have someone with this many wickets at this kind of average is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, Nathan Lyon is an example literally off that, right? He's another finger spinner who does not turn the ball both ways and ended up with more than 500 wickets. But we'll obviously get into those comparisons later.
But an average over 30, right?
That's the point, right? His average.
Do you know
is
what I mean?
Poor.
Which is fine. Mm. For a finger spinner, that's not poor. For a normal bowler, that's poor. So for Ashwin to be so far underneath the other guy of his era does tell you something.
Yeah, he's basically proving Gideon Haigh wrong when he called finger spin cricket's rubbish skill, because Ashwin, even though he doesn't bowl a dusra, he bowls like 10,000 other variations. So I suppose
the carom, doesn't he?
Yeah. The carom is actually spinning it the other way. So I suppose.
But he barely bowls that. So I mean, this isn't like a Saqlain Mushtaq or Mujeeb situation, is it?
Yeah.
Or Tikshana. This is someone who very rarely bowls that delivery. It's not. He bowls it mostly to tail enders now. Occasionally, a bowl it to a top order player just to check if they're watching.
Yeah, basically. And I suppose it's time to address the elephant in the room with respect to Ravi Ashwin and his greatness. And that one glaring question that comes to mind with respect to his record, right, is how well he's bowled, or how poorly he's bowled actually in Australia and South Africa. It's phenomenally terrible. If you look at the numbers, in 10 test matches in Australia, he averages over 42. And in 7 test matches in South Africa, his bowling average is touching 50, right? It's 49.63 or something of the sort. And you know, he's only played a single test in New Zealand where he took 3 wickets. So I don't think we can kind of factor that in, that bowling average of 33 odd. But everywhere else, he's averaged under 30. And in Sri Lanka, West Indies, and unsurprisingly India, he has a bowling average under 22. In the West Indies, it's 19 point something. But that isn't surprising, because you tend to get surfaces which turn a lot in those countries. So with respect to Australia and South Africa, do you feel like he's really dropped the ball? Or is that just because, well, finger spinners tend to do poorly in those sort of conditions?
I actually think he's always bowled pretty well in Australia. Mm-hmm. It's just bowling well in Australia is a different metric if you're an overseas finger spinner, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you average 35, you've probably had a great series. And if you average 45 and you've managed to keep some pressure on, you've probably done okay in Australia. It's just not the same as anywhere else. I also just think that early on in his career, India just didn't really back him to tour. Mm-hmm. And I think if he played a lot more games in Australia and South Africa early on, and he would have just worked it out, right? And, you know, we might come on to that later, but generally he would work it out. And he's tall as well. Mm. So there's no reason why he wouldn't be successful in those places.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Australia, and obviously we have to compare him by default to his great adversary in his era, Nathan Lyon. And Lyon, you know, is the sort of bowler who'll hold his line all day, and he doesn't have a whole lot of tricks up his sleeve. He'll basically wait for the batter to make a mistake. And he does use bounce a lot, particularly at the Gabba, right, where he's had a lot of success. Mm. Ashwin, on the other hand, is a wizard. He has a full bag of tricks and he struggled in Australia, but he got better over time. And I remember in the 2021 series or 2020-2021 tour to Australia, when India went there and, well, eventually won, he had specific plans for Steve Smith and Manas Labuschagne. So he's always kind of upskilled himself and is trying to outthink batters. And that's really his legacy, I think. More than the wickets, it's the mastery and the thought that he puts into his cricket.
So I remember his first tour to Australia. I was covering that one and I thought he bowled beautifully on that tour and just didn't get the wickets. And India sort of panicked and didn't play him away from home for ages, I think in part because of how poorly he bowled. But he didn't bowl poorly, he just didn't take the wickets. But what he didn't do is probably bowl the way that you would need to bowl in Australia at times. And so he went back and he learned. And by the end, he was out bowling Nathan Lyon in Australia. And that's what you're talking about here. It's the attention to detail. It's the, you know, the thinking, the work that he puts in. And we all like to think that professional athletes put, but a lot of them don't. They just turn up and they're naturally gifted and they hope it works. And maybe they get fitter or maybe they get stronger, but they don't break down their game piece by piece and try and work it out. And he does. And his record in Australia probably proves that, you know, how much better he's got over the years that he's bowled there. And he does, if he had a weakness, it's also his strength. He has too big a bag, right? Like, essentially, you look at Shane Warne. Shane Warne basically gave the wrong end up pretty early on. He's like, I'm going to bowl one that goes straight and skids on. And it's either going to be the flipper and then eventually it's going to be the slider. And then I'm going to bowl another one that goes straight that bounces a little bit more. And that's the one I'm trying to turn but doesn't. And then I'm going to bowl one that I'm going to try and turn a lot, right? And now look at Ashwin. Ashwin's got like a million different things that he can do from ball to ball. And sometimes you just think, mate, you're like a tall, accurate, clever, big spinning offie. You don't need to bowl 83 different deliveries, but it's not how he works.
Yeah.
Right. The creativity part of it is, I think, an element of why he's so good.
And you know, I think you described him as someone who plays 5D chess. That's a very accurate description because we're talking about Ravi Ashwin over here. And, you know, in years to come by, I feel like he has a proper career in punditry because the sort of insight that Ashwin would be able to provide would be immense, really. But let's come to England now. Ashwin actually averages 28.11 in 7 tests over there. But since he's played a World Test Championship final versus New Zealand, in which he did quite well, his average shoots up to around 33 versus England in England. Now, those numbers aren't terrible, right? But let's be honest, there are times when Moeen Ali outbowled him in tests over there. And we all know who the better spinner is. So if you have a cricket ball close to you, can you give us a quick intro into the differences between overspin and side spin and all of that stuff and how that might have accounted to these numbers?
Do I have a cricket ball in front of me?
Yes, he does. He's found it.
I think the biggest issue with Ashwin at times is that, and when we're talking about when Moeen Ali outbowled him, what year would that have been? Do you remember?
15?
15-ish?
Yeah, 14, yeah. 15, something right? Like that. That's when Moeen went crazy versus India, right? Like that was some of the best bowls he's bowled in his career. India and South Africa are two teams that he's really troubled.
Yeah. So I think if you have a look at England, Australia and Asia, right? And Asia are more talking here, UAE, India and Sri Lanka, right? So in those parts of Asia, you're basically you're putting a little bit of side spin on the ball, but you're bowling it a little bit faster. Occasionally, you're even bowling under spin on the ball, right? Because the ball's going to spin anyway.
Yeah.
When you go to England, you want to put pure side spin on the ball a lot of times. And the reason then is because the ball drifts in England. So if you put side spin on the ball, it will actually curve away and then come back in. It's not something you see spinners in Asia need to do as much, right? Because they don't need that extra advantage. They get the advantage off the pitch. They don't need the advantage in the air. And if you go to Australia, you want to put more overspin on the ball,
right?
Which is why traditionally wrist spinners do better because they have more natural overspin than finger spinners do. My guess is that if Ashwin had been used correctly early on, if they had seen what I saw in 11-12, right, rather than what they saw, they would have been like, he just needs to work this out. He just needs to work out what to bowl. And we now know that he has no issues with that, right? And he will go on to be a very good bowler in all conditions. But he has to learn that. And how is he supposed to learn that when, you know, he's bowling in Chennai and the ball's ragging for him everywhere, right? And these things are really, really important when you're developing a player. Now, I think this is a really important lesson for how teams handle all talent. Because if Ashwin could be misused for the first five or so years of his career, what the hell is happening to other players who aren't going to work it out for themselves? And over time, he has worked it out. And so you watch him go back, you watch him bowl in the World Test Championship against New Zealand. Look at the way he's using drift there.
Yeah.
He's completely worked it out. Look at the way he used drift the last two times. Used topspin the last two times he's in Australia, right? So everyone has to develop those sorts of things. And it's no different than Jimmy Anderson having to bowl a little bit more back of a length when he bowls in Australia, and, you know, all these different things that you need to learn in different countries. But you have to learn them.
Mm.
And I think what we know with Ashwin is if you give him enough time, he will work out anything.
Yeah.
But you can't just expect any player to just go over and do it. Players will be good where they're naturally good without them having to think at all. But in the places that they're not naturally good, they're going to have to try and work that out. And that takes time.
Yeah. And I mean, given the progress that he did show in England, particularly that World Test Championship final, it is still one of those things that forces you to scratch your head that why he didn't play versus Australia in last year's World Test Championship final. But moving forward, of course, in our discourse, if we compare Ashwin versus right and left-handed batters, we can see that he's far better versus left-handed batters in Senna Nations. So he's a perfect matchup genius, you know, in those conditions. But if you look everywhere else, he's equally good versus left-handers and right-handers. And, you know, that is a bit surprising because you'd expect an off-spinner or a finger spinner to do well versus left-handers because of that whole matchup element. But for him to basically, outside of Senna, perform equally good. And when I say equally good, I mean he's been an absolute beast versus both right and left-handers.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's funny. There was one of the England test matches after the break, they bowled the two left-arm finger spinners. Must have been the first test when they were both playing. They bowled the two left-arm finger spinners together, and there were two right-handers out there. And like someone straight away goes, this is what, you know, send me a message. This is what's wrong with matchups. And I was like, yeah, this is what's wrong with matchups, because he's actually really good against right-handers. There's no reason not to bowl Ashwin to them. And it's actually, I think it's been an issue at times for Akshar and Jadeja, because realistically, there's no time when Ashwin shouldn't be bowling, right? He should just always be bowling in Asia. Like, he is that brilliant in those conditions that you just throw him the ball and he's going to win you the test match. And Jadeja has been at times as good as him, occasionally slightly better, but mostly just slightly behind. And then you got Akshar going, but you picked me as well. Can I have a bowl? And so it does cause a problem. But yeah, in Asian conditions, I remember the way he worked over Ollie Pope on that tour last time.
Hmm.
Obviously, Ollie Pope's done better against him this time. But that last tour where Ollie Pope was just like, he just didn't understand what to do against Ashwin. And, you know, since DRS, really, there's been a huge change. But I think Murali's record gets a lot better against left-handers after DRS than it is before.
Mm.
And if you look at Murali's record, he actually bowled to a lot of left-handers and didn't dismiss them. And then in the era after DRS, he starts dismissing everyone, right? All the left-handers. Ashwin has grown up in an era when him and Graham Swan, I'm trying to think, there's another one as well, Pereira, there's all these guys around the world that are just unplayable if you are left-handed. But in Asia, he's just unplayable all the time. And so there is no let-up if you're a left-hander or a right-hander. Away from home, he's probably a holding bowler against right-handers and then an attacking option against lefties.
Yeah, basically. And you brought
away
up
from Asia, not home.
You brought up Ollie Pope and how he was worked over by Ashwin in the last tour. Well, this time Ollie Pope was reversing, right? And he scored 196. And I think Ollie Pope reverse sweeping his way to nearly a 200 in test cricket is the equivalent of the actual Pope saying okay to same-sex marriages. I think that's a fantastic analogy right over there. But anyway, you mentioned Asian.
There goes the Catholic audience.
Well, let's talk about Ashwin in India, right? And obviously, he's been beyond phenomenal. And he actually has the third best average of all bowlers in the history of sport at home, with at least 200 wickets at home, obviously. And, you know, what I want to ask over here is, obviously, people will bring in the whole dust bowl equation and the fact that he had Jadeja as a bowling partner, and that the pace attack that Ashwin was bowling with for the majority of his career was, you know, more than sturdy. So how much do you think all of those elements contribute to his success at home versus his actual genius?
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN today.
I think that the ragging pitches is probably one of the reasons he has the third best average of the guys in the 500 club, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't think, I mean, the freaking Todd Murphy and Tom Hartley and, you know, Matt Kuhneman, you know, all these other guys, Joe Root, all these other guys are unplayable. Then you have to admit at a certain point that the pitches are playing a part, but they haven't always been ragging like that the way through his career. I think in general, if you look at Marshall and Garner, if you look at McGrath and Warne, if you look at, you know, Wacker and Wasim, generally great bowlers come in pairs or threes or even fours. And it's because even if you've got a bowler who's slightly less good, like say Brett Lee, if Brett Lee is bowling, but he's bowling after McGrath and Gillespie have already knocked over the top order, and now he's bowling with Shane Warne at the end, other end, going at 1.5 runs and over, and, you know, causing problems. Brett Lee's going to have a better average than he would have anyway, because A, he's bowling to more unset batters. Yeah, unset? Is that what I meant? Yeah, I think that's the right word.
I suppose.
Not set.
So. Yeah.
Unset. I think that's what I meant.
Batters who haven't found their feet yet in a particular innings.
Yeah, and so he's going to bowl to more of them. And also there's going to be just more wickets happening, right? You know, he's not going to be having to do the hard yards
because unsettled.
That's what the other bowlers are doing.
Unsettled.
Maybe that's what I meant.
That's it.
I love how you just, not listening to anything, thinking of the word. But Ashwin is different. I'm not comparing him in that way. But what I mean is Ashwin is in the same situation, though, because Jadeja's taking wickets and Bumrah's taking wickets and Shami's taking wickets and Umesh is taking wickets and Ishan, right? You know, you've got all these different Aksha. I've now named them all. Cool dude.
Yep.
You've got all these other guys taking wickets, which does help. So I think all of those things help. But when we looked at him on the flat wickets, where the bowling average was over 40, he averages 30 on those wickets. And the average overall on those wickets is 50.
Wow.
So he is 20 runs per wicket better on a flat Indian wicket than a standard bowler. Now, I think Cheyenne found that one. To be honest, I wouldn't have even looked that up. I'd never even thought of something like that before. But the minute someone says he only takes wickets when it's ragging, he just doesn't. It's just not true.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we have it right there in front of us. And I think it tells you a lot about how good he is. I think if that's the case, put it this way. I know we'll come to other bowlers later on, but there are other bowlers who average, you know, around 30, 32, 33, who have been thought of as great bowlers in Indian history. They weren't bowling on wickets that were averaging 50 runs every time they went out there. Like, they got some good helpful wickets as well and some crumbling fourth innings pitches and all that sort of stuff as well. And they still ended up with an average around 30. The fact that he's so much less than that, I think we have to be honest at a certain point and go, he would have been great in any particular era. Now, he would have bowled differently if it wasn't in the DRS era or on these kinds of pitches. That I don't doubt. But I still think he would have been absolutely, you know, without doubt, would have been a great in any other era if he'd played at the same time.
Yeah, props to Cheyenne for unearthing that statistic. I mean, for Ashwin to average 20 less runs per wicket on flat wickets versus the rest is flat out ridiculous, puns intended.
Hey.
But if we look at Ashwin's innings breakdown in India, right, because we're trying to look at this from a holistic point of view, he is leaps and bounds ahead of all the others in the first innings of a game. And in the second innings, he gets better. The gulf becomes even higher. And while other bowlers, they start to kind of catch up to him in innings 3 and 4, Ashwin is still ahead. So obviously, he would feast on, you know, rank turners. But those numbers literally prove that he does not rely on them.
No, I mean, you're right. It suggests the opposite, right? Hmm. It suggests that when he's way better than other spinners, it's actually when the pitch is at its best.
Yeah.
And as the pitch actually gets to the point where anyone can take wickets, he's still better than the others, but he's not that much better than... That's when the Todd Murphys and the Koonermans and the Jack Leaches, Keshav Maharaj catch up to him, right? Because now the wicket is ragging. All they need to do is come in and bowl a couple of different kinds of deliveries, try and hit the same spot, and they're going to be really dangerous. Whereas early on, when the pitch is helping the batters a little bit more and it hasn't started to deteriorate, the guy who is absolutely brilliant in that part is Ashwin, because he has the full bag, right? He's not just good at one or two things when it comes to spin bowling. He's good at pretty much everything when it comes to spin bowling. Flight, guiles, you know, varying his speed, varying his angles, anything that you want, he can do it.
I've seen him York batters out as well. Like, I've seen Ashwin do everything pretty much. And
he's not Mark Watt. Settle down.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not just the variations. Obviously, inventing new sorts of deliveries and enhancing his artillery and that bag of tricks that has pretty much been the theme of his entire career. That is sort of his legacy. But it's not just that. It's the angles. He'll sometimes invent an entirely new angle and work out a way to, you know, get a particular kind of batter out. Sometimes he'll be completely blocking the umpire's view and going from one side to the other after he bowls a delivery. And you'd have to say that in the history of our sport, no other spinner, at least based on what I've seen, has added to their arsenal more than Ashwin.
Do you know what I think? I think he's coming along as a perfect person at a perfect time where we have close-up cameras. Mm-hmm. In fact, do you remember, I don't know if you ever saw it, I did a thing with a guy who has, he bought the camera that, he's a Patreon subscriber, and he bought this camera that was the hummingbird camera, so you could see the flaps of the hummingbird wings. Mm. And he used it with Benny Howell, and I think he might have got too busy with work. I haven't heard from him in ages, although he'd probably be listening to this. I tried to hook him up with Ashwin because I wanted to see what Ashwin could make of that technology. But even without that, you know, you go online and there's these kids like breaking down frame by frame what Ashwin and Rashid Khan and, you know, Ravi Bishnoi and all these different spinners are doing, you know, that is slightly different and everything else. Ashwin is kind of one of those kids, but with the skill to do all the stuff on the field. So the combination of technology and his own knowledge have sort of come together at the right time. And so I wouldn't say he has invented new balls like Saqlain Mushtaq or, you know, or Clary Grimmett or anything like that. But what he has done is probably understood every subtle change a finger spinner can make. That I don't think, this is not to say that Bishan Bedi or Sunny Ramadan or, you know, Lance Gibbs didn't know some of these things, but they couldn't see it.
Yeah.
They couldn't understand it, right? They couldn't do a test in the net and then go back and look at the footage and go, ah, when I do this, it actually does that. So Gareth Batty talks about how Ashwin can bowl. So a traditional off spinner will bowl out to in, which means that you drift the ball away and it spins back in. But there are some off spinners who have a weird action. They come over their head a little bit more and they bowl in to in. So the ball actually drifts in and then spins in, right? Ashwin knows that. And you can see him even in a delivery try that. Then you can see him purposely put his fingers underneath and try and create that sort of UFO ball that Graham Swan had. It's the ability to go between all those different things that really sets him apart. So he's not inventing new deliveries every time he goes out there, but what he is doing is using them in a slightly different way and putting tilting the seam in a different direction and using the smooth side of the ball and then the rough side of the ball and everything else to try and get the ball to do a slightly different thing every time it goes down.
He's a student of the game who basically applies these subtle changes and tweaks these deliveries, already existing deliveries up to, you know, do things that most of us have not thought about. He's the sort of kid who probably does not need technology to count the number of revs on the ball from the time he delivers it to when it pitches.
Yeah,
you know, you're a bowler, right? And you've bowled in the net sometimes and the balls come out and you'd be like, that did something weird.
Yeah.
That didn't do what I was trying to do there, right? And I know test bowlers have done this before. Ian O'Brien was a famous one of trying to work out, wait a minute, something was different then. I'm going to try and work it out, whatever. And it's harder for seamers because kind of seamers just run up and try and hit the top of off stump, even though we overcomplicate what they do sometimes. That's essentially what most fast bowlers do. But Ashwin is the sort of person who wants to know why that last ball did that weird thing. Can he replicate it? Can he make it happen again? Is there a way of tweaking it? Is there something they could do? And that it's that attention to detail that you said a student of the game. He's a super villain of the game.
Yeah, I suppose that's apt. I mean, if you're averaging 20 runs less on a flat wicket than all of the other bowlers, then you're definitely a super villain, right? You're that evil genius who none of those superheroes can defeat. But I think we'll come back to his bowling in a bit. Let's talk about his batting, all right? Ashwin is not exactly a genuine all-rounder, but he provides decent utility with the bat. And, you know, if we compare him to the 8 other members of the 500 test wicket club, he has more hundreds than all of them combined. Till 2017, he had a better batting average than Ravi Jadeja, but his batting average has dropped considerably since. He's not that good against pace. And, you know, even though all of those things said and done, he has some memorable knocks in the fourth innings, right? He did have that innings in Sydney where he copped several body blows and kind of drew that test, dead batting it. And, well, leaving it and taking some blows to the body. And also, he once helped India chase 145 in Mirpur, Dhaka, when, Shreyas Iyer was by his side and India was 74 for the loss of 7 wickets. They went on to chase that. And, you know, those results were really important with respect to qualification for the World Test Championship final. So, bearing that in mind, would you say that Ashwin is a clutch batter in Test cricket?
No, I don't think so. I think part of the reason he's probably better in the fourth innings is the ball doesn't come on as quickly. And I think that's probably one of his technical problems. He doesn't move. He's not a fast twitch athlete. He's an incredible athlete, but he's not, he's the Nikola Jokic of cricket, right? Like athletically, probably can't jump over his own shadow, right?
Yeah.
Can't disconnect from his own shadow. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Neil Manthorpe was commentating on TalkSport. And he said, one thing I've always really liked about Ashwin is he's always moved like a man of his age. when he's 35, he runs like a 35-year-old in the field, right? There's none of this Saf du Plessis nonsense or Brendan McCullum nonsense. Like, he looks like he's an old man in the field. So I think in the fourth innings, it's that. I also think he's very good at situational batting. As in, not the most talented batter, but he is very good at coming up with, of going, this is what I need to do in this situation. And I will now cut out this part of my game and just focus on this. I'll just get hit in Australia or, you know, I'll turn the ball for one. I was watching him bat in the fourth innings of that chase where, you know, India lost that first test against England. And I was like, do you know what? I'd almost rather have him out there at the moment than a specialist batter. Not that a specialist batter isn't better, but a specialist batter would still be thinking, I need to play all these different shots and put pressure back on, where he was just like, well, they're not going to get me out if they bowl this delivery. And when they bowl this delivery, I can get a single. That's all I need to do. Block these three balls and score off this one ball. And then eventually they will start to panic, you know. And to be fair, he got that game closer than it probably should have got. So I think he's very good at that. And I think that has helped him a lot in white ball cricket as well. So you look at T20 cricket of going, I'm not an all-rounder. I remember talking to Rajasthan. They asked me about their team and I said, you don't have an all-rounder. Like, you don't even have, like, unless you're hoping Shiv and Dubey can bowl 2 or 3 overs a game. I don't know how this team is going to go. And so Ashwin's like, okay, well, I'm going to make myself into an all-rounder. I'm going to just attack spin. I'm going to, bat in that position. And occasionally it was chipping spin around, occasionally it was slogging. But again, it was finding a way to be effective with the bat, especially as he's got older, which I really, really admire. That it's a very smart way of going about your batting if you know you're not particularly good. Most people who aren't very good at batting just play stupid shots, right? Like, whereas he tries, even when he's playing a big slog or whatever it may be, you could see there's a, you can see there's a reason behind why he's playing those shots.
Yeah, you brought up T20 batting. Of course, I know this is a test cricket podcast more so because that's where he's gotten the 500 test wickets. But there's that finish versus Pakistan in Melbourne, right? Which you can definitely think of.
The leave?
The leave, yeah. He was quite smart over there. And at that point, you know, I think he's on record where he says that if he could not have pulled that off, he might have retired from T20 cricket at the spot. But, you know, it requires a certain kind of a breed of minerals to do what Ashwin did. And that's where the evil genius part comes up.
Thanks to the kind folks at FlexiSpot for looking after my office and my butt by sending me their E7 Pro desk that save your favorite desk heights at a touch of a button. You don't have to crank anything. This thing just finds the height that you like and you can work. And their BS12 Pro chair that supports my posterior while I'm recording, well, this ad and all my shows. If you need great desks, especially ones that change heights or the best quality chairs, head on over to FlexiSpot. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think other cricketers would have thought that, right? But he's backing it up also with the ability to do it.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, he was so sure where the ball was going to be that he knew what Nawaz was going to do before Nawaz knew what he was going to do, right? And aren't you happy I didn't say Rizwan?
He was, that's good on you. But he knew what Nawaz was going to do before Nawaz was born.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so, but then, as you've said, it's the ability to back it up. And you know, it's the same. You can talk about the man cads as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's willing to back up his thoughts. And you know, if you tell him off for man cads, he's going to be like, well, wait a minute. Why is the batter not in trouble? Like, he doesn't start with... He talks about the spirit of cricket, but he very rarely started with the spirit of cricket when he first began talking about man cads. What did he talk about? Well, wait a minute. The batter's allowed to cheat, but I'm not allowed to dismiss him. And, you know, as a fellow cricket nerd, I'm completely on his side when it comes to that sort of stuff, right? And it's fascinating to watch someone in real time sort of do that in front of you.
Yeah, in the future when man cards are normalized, you know, we look back to Ravi Ashwin because he's literally been the torchbearer for the man card in the 21st century and he's brought it back into fashion. He has wasted a lot of his energy on Twitter just talking about it and defending himself and fighting other people. And it would be unfair for us to have an Ashwin-specific podcast on Footmarks and not talk about that. Also, how many finger spinners have attempted to bowl wrist spin, right? Just Ashwin? Or is there someone else? Of course, there's someone else. You know about this person. You always bring someone up.
Sobers.
Okay.
Mark Watt.
Okay.
No, there's a couple. Yeah. I mean, I think what's more interesting is Mark Watt used it occasionally against left-handers. Hmm. If he can't work out a way to slow a left-hander down, traditionally he would try it. Garfield Sobers would try it when fingerspin wasn't working, or if he's he got tired from bowling or bored from bowling fingerspin, right?
And Liam Livingstone does not count. Livingstone is
Livingstone and Sachin don't count because they're just part-timers who are bored and Root does it as well, right? Hmm. But no, I think you're right. I think and the other thing is there was a long period where he was like bowling a lot more leg spin that it wasn't just like Mark Watt used it. And it wasn't the way that Garfield Sobers used it, you know. And traditionally there was some bowlers back in the old days who were sometimes would bowl a little bit of both, but it's not really something we see in modern cricket, and it's not usually something we see from specialist bowlers. Mm. And there was one year in the IPL, I just thought his bowling leg spin I couldn't believe the commentators weren't just calling him a leg spinner. Like, it felt like to me he'd almost changed what he was bowling. It's just an incredible skill to suddenly change between those two things. They are not similar, right? Like, I can bowl leg spin and I can bowl rubbish off spin, right? Mm. That's where I would expect most people to be able to. If you're capable with one, you can probably bowl the other one in a way that looks okay for one delivery. But ball after ball, and I thought it was the way he thinks about cricket. You know, the Subhash interview he did years ago where he talked about the six well constructed bad balls. It's so far, I couldn't even get that at the time that he was talking about it. And it was only later when I really started working with bowlers and their death capabilities that I was like, he is, on a completely different level, the way he thinks about things.
I mean, I'm surprised he hasn't tried his hand bowling with the left arm yet. Because if he could become ambidextrous, then he would be the true supervillain or the Thanos of the cricketing world. But anyway, coming back to his batting and kind of wrapping that up, the all-rounder debate, right? I did mention earlier that up until 2017, he did have a better batting average than Ravi Jadeja. He was averaging around 35. And I remember Star Sports has this ad where there's this guy looking at the screen and he's like, oh, Ashwin did it again. And he's like, oh, how many wickets did he take? And he's like, no, he scored a ton. So he had kind of built that reputation for himself. It did drop. But if we look at, 2016 and 2017, he batted fairly frequently in the top seven. And, he played a lot in Asian conditions in the West Indies in that period. So it kind of makes sense. But he was able to give India a lot of depth and flexibility with respect to their lineup. So for that period alone, you could probably consider him to be an outside Senna genuine all-rounder, maybe?
Yeah, probably at his best. Maybe less so now, but certainly at his best, I think. I certainly considered him an all-rounder in Asia for a long time, maybe even after he stopped being able to do that job. And he gave them the ability to have, that longer batting lineup or even bat at number seven at times. So I think that's fair. Not a top six. You probably would never want him at six. But I thought he had a really good technique against spin and played in Asian conditions very, very well for a long period of time. I just think he's slowed down. He's, and he was never a quick guy. So if he slows down a little bit, he's going to be a little bit more of a target for the fast bowlers. But also he can't get out to the spinners as much and everything else.
Yeah. All right, let's come to the fun part. We're going to do a small little exercise in which we'll compare Ravi Ashwin with the other Indian spinners and come to the bones of an argument which is centered around whether or not Ashwin is the greatest ever bowler or spin bowler to come out of India. So, of course, you have Bishan Bedi. Bishan Bedi, for those who don't know, had a fourth innings average of 14.5. But overall, you'd still take Ashwin.
Look, I think Bishan Bedi was great. A fantastic bowler, probably under remembered now because India didn't play as many test matches at that time and they weren't a particularly strong side. I don't know if I'd have him ahead of Kumble, but I probably have him as my third best Indian spinner. Certainly ahead of Harbhajan and I thought Chandra was great too, but I'd probably have Bishan ahead of the others. And he was an absolute master of the ball, but all four innings inside and outside of Asia, I'd rather have Ashwin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, outside of the actual fourth innings, where Bishan Bedi was unplayable, I should say. Yeah. So all three innings, inside and outside of Asia, I'd probably pick Ashwin over Bedi. And then in the fourth innings, I don't know, if you're averaging 14 and a half, I have to give it to you at a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's high praise that if you look at all four innings, someone is trumping Ashwin in the fourth. So that's crazy. Harbhajan, you mentioned him. And of course, early on in his career, he was striking at a very high rate in India. But, while he was excellent up until 2005, the drop-off was also quite, ridiculous. The average ballooned and he didn't end up with the same sort of numbers and they aren't particularly comparable to Ashwin. But you forgot Ravi Jadeja because this is someone who he's going toe-to-toe with in Indian conditions. And Ashwin and Jadeja, they operate as a pair and they hunt as a pair. He's still ahead, Ashwin, in the numbers. But do you think Jadeja maybe could eke out or ahead of Ashwin in Indian conditions?
I mean, Jadeja's older than I think people think he is because maybe he was so fresh-faced for so long. He'd be fresh-faced with
injured a lot
with
of times.
Beard and mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was injured a lot. I don't think he's a better bowler than Ashwin, but I think because of his if he played for an extra 4 or 5 years, and who knows how long Ashwin will play as well, but if he played for another 4 or 5 years, then maybe he could get some of the similar counting stats as Ashwin. I don't think he'll end up with as good an average just because I think that they've already decided to make their wickets slightly less, treacherous for batters. But I don't think Jadeja will ever go past him. But if he hangs around and takes another couple of hundred wickets, then... he's certainly back in that conversation, but certainly not going to get there.
Yeah.
One thing, by the way, it's not in the piece, but we did look this up just about because you mentioned Harbhajan, and we did actually look this up. So Harbhajan quite often complains that Ashwin has had better pitches to play on, if you look at their pitches ratio, so the matches that they played in. So Ashwin's record is 1.4 1.4 on those. And Habajans is 1.1. So he wasn't dominant. Even on flat pitches, he wasn't a particularly dominant player, whereas Ashwin has shown to be dominant even on flat pitches at times. We didn't put it in the video because we didn't have to, because obviously there are many other things that separate them. But it is one worth saying, just because Habajan goes on and on about, look at the pitches he gets the ball on. Mm. Well, you weren't dominating on the pitches that you were bowling on anyway, and he has dominated on the pitches that rag and on the pitches that don't rag.
I mean, I would take anything that Habajan says with an ounce of salt. He has that faux bravado about him, and he's pretty much always complaining and ends up saying things that he regrets later. That's kind of his personality. But
I hope he slaps you for this.
I mean, I'm not Sri Sant. But anyway, that leaves us with, the obvious candidate to kind of compare with Ashwin with, and that is Anil Kumble. He's the only other Indian bowler to have breached the 500 wicket barrier in Test cricket. He actually ended up with 619 scalps in the format, and weirdly enough, was not a big turner of the ball. He'd get you with those straighter ones, and he applied a fair amount of drift, and he would kind of bowl them at a good length all day. Whereas, Ashwin might never cross Kumble's tally of wickets, or maybe he will. Who's to say he won't? But another 115 wickets, I'm kind of estimating, because we don't know how much he'll end up with after the Rajkot test. But let's say he takes five, right? Another 115 wickets where Ashwin is definitely, in the twilight of his career, and we don't even know how many overseas tests he's going to get based on the way India use him, right? He might never cross Kumble. And you'd think that Ashwin is a better quality spinner, but let's not forget that Anil Kumble, in the games that he played against Shane Warne and Muthiah Muralidharan, who are the two spinners or greatest spinners of all time and his era, he outbowled them. So it's an interesting comparison.
In India.
Yeah. So it is an interesting comparison, isn't it?
Yeah. I've always wanted to do something on Kumble, and this video kind of ends up being a lot about Kumble. Hmm. And it's not an accident, because I really wanted to test. So just on that match, what we were talking about, the error ratio and the match ratio. Error ratio, Kumble is a bit further behind Ashwin. But match ratio, when you look at the pitches they both went on, Kumble's match ratio, he was 35% better than a normal bowler in those pitches. And Kumble was 40%. Kumble was 35% and Ashwin was 40%. So Ashwin still beats him, right? There's nothing we can do about that. He's still better. But that was the stat I was really interested in, because I watched a lot of those test matches. Kumble bowled on some of the most doggonary wickets for a bowler. Like, you just felt sorry for this guy having to come in and bowl on those. And because of that, he doesn't have the killer average, right? Whereas when you look at this in an advanced way, like you look at him versus, Murali and Warne. You look at him on these flat pitches in India and you start to go, this was a great bowler who happened to bowl on wickets that were probably set up for India's strength at the time, which was batting. Right? They had that great batting lineup. Why would you not feed that batting lineup? That's how you were going to crush teams. And then you hope that you get to the end and Kumble or Venkatapati Raju or Kumble and Habajan completely destroy in the final innings and you take the game home. Right? So your batters make 500, 600 runs and then you run through the team at the end of the game, which is absolutely a solid way of going. But it does mean that they had a Rolls Royce of bowling. And they made him do a lot of trips to the shops to get milk, right? Like a lot of dog stuff that you probably don't want a bowler of that talent to have to go through. But I think it was also fair, because you can't just compare their bowling averages. You really do have to go through pound for pound for what the two of them do. And when it comes down to it, Kumble does hold up remarkably well against Ashwin. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that Kumble was Ashwin before we had Twitter. Right? Like he reads books and he's an intelligent guy and he's a bit of a nerd and the sort of people who like Kumble are people like me, who are absolutely fascinated in the small changes that he could do and make, and have success with. And the fact that he didn't spin it and still took all these wickets. Like there's a lot of fascinating things about Kumble the bowler. And I thought the two of them being compared was worthy, right? But also they're similar. So it wasn't just that I was comparing them because they might be the two best spinners ever from India and probably are, but also because they're actually quite similar. They go about their life in different ways. I think Kumble was probably less likely to try and upset people You know, and Ashwin doesn't care about that sort of side of it as much. But they're very similar sorts of guys, the way they think about the game. You know, you talked about the students of the game. They are people who are trying to learn every time they have a ball in their hand.
Yeah, they're absolute nerds. And Kumble even had that look for the longest time. In fact, I'm disappointed, Jared, you didn't look up Kumble's numbers with the stash and without the stash and with the glasses and without the glasses and with the headband and without the headband. There's so many things that Anil Kumble did, right?
Travis set up Stats Guru years ago, and I was telling him for years, sadly the great man has passed, but I was telling him for years, so many things you missed out on Stats Guru, and facial hair was the main one, and Travis 100% agreed.
Yeah, well, rest in peace, Travis. And, I think you've already touched on errors ratio and match factor and how Ashwin is slightly ahead with respect to Kumble over there. But one more thing that we need to consider over here is that Ashwin, as we've mentioned before, that bowlers kind of humped in packs. And Ashwin had really, really like world-class support in Jadeja and Akshar Patel. Whereas Kumble, you know, had Bhaji in his prime for a bit, but then Bhaji dropped off. So that also needs to be factored in, I believe.
Yeah, he had Venkatapati Raju, who was a really good bowler. I loved him. He's one of my favorite bowlers. Probably the first finger spinner I ever really got. Like, Australian finger spinners were so shit in that era that I was just like, why are they even trying this finger spin? And then you watch Venkatapati Raju and you're like, oh, that's what it should be, right? Now I get it. But again, not on the level of Jadeja or probably even Akshar. And he's also had the quicks, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Kumble had a little bit of Zahir Khan, a little bit, and Srinath, both fantastic bowlers. Neither of them are Bumrah. And also, they didn't have the support cast of all the other Indian quicks that they've had there. So from that point of view, you know, certainly that's another big thing in Ashwin's advantage, I think. And again, it's just something that you have to factor in, that Ashwin is one of five top-level bowlers at any time. India have very rarely had five great, you know, above-average bowlers in a bowling attack, let alone, you know, three and sometimes when Kumble was playing. So it's a big difference when you've got that kind of backup. When you know that the bowler at the other end is Akshar, right? Or you know, Umesh Yadav, and the ball's reversing or whatever it may be. That's a lot better than if you go back to some of the Indian bowlers that Kumble had to bowl with. It makes a difference.
Yeah. Also, everything that we've, you know, discussed up until now in the Kumble-Ashwin comparison, you know, it's toe-to-toe, you'd have to say. It's not much that separates the two. The match factors and errors ratios are literally, those statistics exist to prove that. But if you look at Kumble outside of India, particularly, you know, in Sena nations, that average goes to shit, let's be honest, right? And Ashwin, whilst we have discussed, you know, how his numbers don't quite stack up, you know, compared to his numbers in Sri Lanka, West Indies, and India, there are, you know, some high averages in Australia and South Africa. In England, he's done well, 28. New Zealand, he's just played one test. You'd have to say that Ashwin, you know, did grow as a bowler. He worked those things out. We touched upon this earlier, how he got better with time in every country that he bowled, in Australia, in England, pretty much everywhere. So that, you know, is something that I believe is enough evidence to make the claim that Ravi Ashwin is the greatest spinner to come out of India. And I would put him ahead of Kumble because of that.
Yeah, I think for me, I wanted to prove, because there's a lot of 90s kids going Ashwin gets ragging pitches, right? And then there's a lot of modern kids going, well, wait a minute, Ashwin has this average and Kumble has that average. What the hell are we even talking about here? I wanted to show that it was closer than the modern crew understood. And also, his case wasn't as airtight as what the old heads wanted. And that's what we were really trying to get to. And, you know, this is me and Cheyenne obviously worked on this together. This was the bit that I really wanted to get right because I thought that was fair. And look, I obviously watched Kumble bowl, you know, quite a bit in Australia, but also, you know, watched him, you know, bowl around the world at times as well, you know, in the test matches that I was able to see in those other places. He wasn't, what's the best way of putting it? He certainly wasn't,
If you're batting against him and batting against Ashwin, you feel far more threatened when you're facing Ashwin, I suppose. Even though that's probably Kumble's strength, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what happens of when you watch Kumble and when you watch him bowl overseas, you were really watching a stock bowler try and put pressure on you, right? And that was that seemed to be the main skill that he had, was just that ability to keep the pressure on you. Whereas if you look at Ashwin, there are times when he's a stock bowler, when you need him to be, but there are also times when he can attack and put that pressure back on even early on. The other thing about, the other thing about Kumble overall is that if you take out his India record, he averages 37 in Asia. That's Sri Lanka, Bangladesh and Pakistan.
Yep.
I think Bangladesh is the only place where he took wickets in Asia, and they were obviously very new to the game when he was going up against them. He was legitimately a great bowler in India. I don't know if you'd make a claim that there was anywhere else where he was a great bowler. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head if I'm missing one. Well, other than maybe Bangladesh, but even then. So he doesn't really average under 30 anywhere else, right? Yeah. He just doesn't have that kind of impact. And as I said, I'm matching that up also with the many thousands of hours that I've seen him bowl. I always felt that he was a stock bowler when he went away, and a really good one, don't get me wrong. Like, wouldn't give you anything, you know, would keep you tied up as much as he could possibly. Whereas we have seen Ashwin not be that kind of bowler. We've seen Ashwin attack. We've seen Ashwin put pressure on you and then also have that ability to be a stock bowler. So I do think you're right. It's something else that does separate the two of them. And again, that is also for the old heads, when they go on and on about Kumble, they are really talking about Kumble in India. All right. They're not really talking about him as much. But the one thing I would say is we didn't see as much cricket during Kumble's career. Right. Not all the series were played. We didn't always have access and we couldn't go back and look at it as well. So the majority of cricket that Indian fans would have seen Kumble play would have been at home. And to be fair to them, he would have looked pretty good because he averages like 24 or something in India. Right. Like, he was absolutely breathtaking at home.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at home, we've literally gone through this entire exercise because we were comparing Ashwin to other bowlers at home. And over there, they are neck to neck. Ashwin is still slightly ahead. But when you look at them as an overall package across, you know, all conditions, Ashwin is clearly the better one. But it made sense to spend, 20, 25 minutes on this comparison because that's the big one, right? He's the one, Kumble, with 600 plus wickets, 619, and Ashwin has joined the 500 club. So it's the obvious thing to do. And I'm glad that we went into the depths of it. And kudos to Shayan as well. And you might not know this, but I was also helping him with ideas in the backdrop.
Look at you.
He picked my brain as well. Anyway.
No. I think for this kind of piece, I mean, that's why we have the team, right? That's why we have so many different people with so many different viewpoints to get into that sort of thing. And I push the Kumble thing partly because he does have 600 wickets, but also because I don't think Kumble's average makes him look worse than he was, if that makes sense. And we know that wasn't the case. He was absolutely fantastic. And he was an absolute brilliant bowler. And I don't want players like that to get forgotten. But at the same time, I grew up watching Kumble and loving Kumble. And I love Ashwin. Ashwin's just better. That's just the truth of the matter.
Yeah, I remember we were doing Footmarks or Uncovered once in which we were discussing MVP IPL seasons. Kumble had one, so there's no doubting his brilliance, right?
He would have been a great IPL player, yeah. Like, I mean, if he played in his peak, I would have loved to have seen him in T20. Definitely. I think it would have suited him more than test bowling.
All right, before we end this podcast, because we've literally discussed everything that there is to discuss with respect to Ravi Ashwin and his legacy and, you know, what makes him brilliant and why he has 500 test wickets, I'm going to put you on the spot over here. 9 bowlers in the history of test cricket have taken more than 500 wickets. Rank them.
Oh. Okay. I need to remember who they are.
There's Vaughan Murley, Courtney Walsh. There is Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Ravi Ashwin, Anil Kumble. How much have I named? How much are left? Nathan Gallagher.
You're missing.
Yeah.
I would have McGrath at number one. I would probably have either Warne or Murley at 2-3. Probably Warne just ahead, only because, you know, as great as Murley was, a lot of his record, when you do break it down, was against the slightly easier attacks. But I don't think there's much between him and Warne. I would have Courtney Walsh at 4. Jimmy Anderson at... Oh, would I have Jimmy Anderson ahead of Courtney Walsh now? God, that would have been automatic before. I'm going to have Jimmy ahead of Courtney Walsh, because I think if you go back, the averages, I reckon that Jimmy played on slightly flatter wickets, but you know, I'm not, there's not a lot there between those two. I would probably then have, I don't know what number I'm up to, but I would have Ashwin next.
You basically put him at six, I think, because you did McGrath, Warren.
I put Ashwin at six, have I?
Yeah, yeah. Jimmy, Courtney, and then Ashwin. And you've got three more bowlers remaining.
Three more bowlers remaining.
Yeah.
And then I would have, so I've got Broad, Lyon, and Kumble. So I would have Kumble next, then Broad, then Lyon, or do I want Lyon ahead of Broad now?
Putting Lyon ahead of Broad would be hilarious. I mean, I would love the audience to react to that, because Broad,
I'm not sure he doesn't deserve to be, because you've got an English bowler with an average of 27 in those conditions compared to an Australian off spinner with an average of 30.
Maybe
there's about four runs different.
Maybe Lyon even deserves to be ahead of Kumble on those lines, because he is an Australian finger spinner.
I mean, he's got a better average. What was Kumble's average overall? He's just under 30, wasn't he? So he's got a slightly better average. I think I probably still have Kumble slightly ahead of the other two. But those are the three that I would say are probably more, you know, they were obviously great wicket takers. Mm. But if you look at the next bowlers down, you've, like, the next bowler down on the list is Steyn, right? Mm. And I know he's a long way away from 500, but you know, with all due respect to Broad, Lyon, and Kumble, like, no one's not taking Steyn if you've got an option there. So there are a few bowlers outside of that list that are a little bit different. But I would, you know me, in order to actually come up with this list would take me about 17 years. But off the top of my head, I don't know where, I think Murali and Warne and Broad and Lyon, I'd probably have to jingle the most. But I think I would have Kumble ahead of Broad and Lyon. I don't think that's massively controversial. Although, you know, I don't think that's that controversial. And then the other two at the end. I mean, there aren't any bad bowlers on that list. They're all, like, to take 500 wickets in Test cricket, like, just the amount of times you have to bowl. And you know, you just see people go, oh, you know, Jimmy's only good when it's cloudy and Ashwin needs it, right? And it's just like, guys, a lot of people have had clouds. A lot of people have had dusty wickets. Do you know how hard it is to be able to consistently at the level that all nine of those bowlers have been, right? Like, just, it's mind-blowing to get to that level. As I just said, you can look down the list and you see Steyn and Hadley and, you know, other fantastic bowlers who never got anywhere near 500. We're not saying that they couldn't have done it, but there are many great bowlers who just, their bodies wouldn't allow them to, their minds wouldn't allow them to. They would get tired, they would get, you know, they would get injured, you know, their minds would wander, whatever that may be. The ability to just come in and bowl as much as these guys have to take 500 test wickets is, it's ridiculous. And, you know, respect to all of them. I mean, let's just have a look. Kumble's bowled 40,000 test deliveries.
Wow.
And Ashwin has bowled, oh wait, is that right? Yeah. And Ashwin has bowled 25,000 deliveries. Like, my God. My God, what have you and I done 25,000 times? Like, brush our teeth and fart? Like, not many things have we done that much in our life.
Yeah, basically.
It's a weird way to end the podcast, I give you.
It is. I mean, congratulations to Ravi Ashwin. He definitely deserved to be on this list. And who's to say where he would have ended
Ashwin.
Up?
He's now going to be upset. You said congratulations and then said Ravi. And he's been like, don't congratulate me with my wrong name. R. Ashwin, please.
All right, R. Ashwin. But yeah, it is a phenomenal achievement. And I mean, who's to say how many he would have ended up with had he played for India more, which I really think he could have at times. Mm. But yeah, I mean, if you agree
with... Who knows how long he goes for as well, as you said before. Yeah.
Who knows? Even Lyon, for that matter. I mean, this might be the 600 club. We might be redoing these podcasts in a few years.
Again.
But anyway, guys, you let us know whether or not you agree with Jared's power ranking of the nine bowlers who've...
Don't let me know. Let Bayram know.
Yeah. And leave your ranking in the comments below. And we'll wrap up this podcast on that note. If you liked it, do throw us a like, share this with your friends and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Footmarks Podcast. Till then, that'll be all. Goodbye.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. Social media nightmares keeping you up after you turn out 25 minutes of gold on your podcast? It's time to wake up to Memento FM. They find the best designs for your posts, transforming your videos and podcasts into great social media posts. Join Memento FM today.